ours is now to see as to whether we are going to have positive results out of it. During the course of this year, we are going to have more meetings with the department on different sub-programs of this detective program. I want to believe that today we will know exactly as to what is happening. Of course, you will know in the field of forensic services, I have interest in that. Not because I'm an analyst, I'm not. However, I do have interest in that. We have not been receiving positive information about this. We're not very sure whether the statistics that we are given by the department re-addressing the backlog and the forensic environment are correct, and even the information. We will therefore hear from your good self as to whether we should believe all that you're telling us or not. And we'll take it from there as a portfolio committee. Ours is to do our work to the best of our ability as per our oath that we take as members when we are sworn in. I will then hand over to the Acting National Commissioner to take us through the presentation.
Thank you and good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. Today, as indicated in our program, we'll be presenting on program D3, which is the detective services. Chairperson, please allow us to first start with the expenditure estimate of this program. Lieutenant General Gete.
Thank you, Chairperson. As indeed indicated by you in your opening remarks, Program 3 Detective Services has indeed significantly been increased in terms of funding. Now, this program consists of the four well-known sub-programs: Crime Investigation, Criminal Record Center, Forensic Science Laboratory, Specialized Investigations. In the crime investigation, the first sub-program, the increase is in excess of 12%, which includes also a significant amount for the CJF. Criminal Record Center, the increase in vicinity of 14%. Forensic Science Laboratory has a bit of a decrease, the reason being that in the previous financial year we provided in excess of 300 million. In addition, this year it is 225. For the CJS specifically. Specialized Investigations, an increase of 16% and includes an additional 100 million. That is why we say, when we look at the bullets just underneath purpose, CJS revamp initiatives, operational portion. Remember, the other portion is with TMS and the program, one as an IT aspect. We'll also strongly promote further capacity enhancement at Crime Investigations, 300 million of the CJS money, forensics, 225 of the CJS money, and Criminal Record Center, 317 million of the CJS money. The responsible divisional commissioners will, and Deputy National Commissioner will obviously also in the presentations dig deeper into what will be done in this regard. Specialized Investigations consisting once again of the DPCI. Also for the DPCI, we say significant resourcing, especially from 2012-13, and this year once again there's the 100 million in addition boost. Detectives to receive specific training, and we included that note to remind members of the dedicated training that is envisaged by the Human Resource Development division in terms of detectives. Then once again, we will be, as yesterday also indicated, strengthening stock theft units in the detective environment, and then also the other specialized units such as FCS. This, in essence, I think this program and the figures are self-explanatory of nature. And let me hand over to Deputy National Commissioner, Lieutenant General Labia, in order to facilitate the presentation further in this regard. I think we can conclude by means of this to say I think this is indeed a year for the detectives. Thank you.
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members, I am going to start with the presentation. There are two environments. I will deal with those that deals with the detective service and forensic services. The rest of the presentation will be dealt with by my colleague from the DPCI. So my presentation will start from slide 96 until 108. Then I will hand over to my colleague to deal with slide 109 until 118. Thereafter, I will take it from there, starting with slide 119 to 127. Starting with from slide number 96, the purpose of this environment is to enable the investigative work of the South African Police Service, including providing support to investigators in terms of forensic evidence and the Criminal Record Center. The strategic objective is to contribute to the successful prosecution of crime by investigating, gathering and analyzing evidence, thereby increasing the detection rate of priority crime. The program comprises the following: crime investigation, specialized investigation, the Criminal Record Center, and the Forensic Science Laboratory. As I have indicated, I will deal with three, and the specialized investigation will be dealt with by my colleague. Starting with the sub-program of crime investigation, the priority is the effective investigation and detection of serious crimes, contact-related crimes, crimes against women and children, property-related crimes, and crimes dependent on police action for detection. The performance indicator in this regard is the detection rate for serious crimes, the percentage of court-ready case dockets, and the conviction rate for serious crime. Starting with the first performance indicator, the baseline from 2010-2011 was 51.84%, with the figure in bracket, and the estimated performance for 2011-2012 is 53%, that is the detection rate has to be increased to 53%. So the target set in this regard is to increase by 2% so that it comes to 55%. The percentage of court-ready case dockets for serious crime, the baseline was 30.84%, and the estimated performance of court-ready case dockets is to be increased by 3% to 33.84%. The target set in this regard is that the court-ready case dockets increased by 3% to 36.84%. The conviction rate for serious crime. The honorable members will recall that in the previous year, we didn't have this performance indicator. We have been instructed by this August House that this performance indicator needed to be included. We have included it. And then the baseline that we see there for the 2010-2011 is 87.56, translated to the figures of 309,295. What we have done is to go over to our records and took over the existing figures, use the formulas that our National Prosecuting Authority has been utilizing, calculated and got this figure. So the estimated performance here, conviction rate increased by 0.64% to 88.20. That will be translated to 311,274 cases. May I pause a little, honorable members, and indicate that within these figures of 311,000, what that we are talking about, there are no less than 821 life sentences, of which 265 are for murder, 495 are for rape, and 65 are for robbery. Furthermore, there are no less than 2,208 persons who have been sentenced to imprisonment for a period of 20 years and above. This is in respect of 2,219 cases. So the specific details will come with the annual report when it comes out. Honorable members, the conviction rate target is to be increased by 0.80% to 8.50. The hard figure will be 312,208. The next priority is effective investigation and the detection of serious crimes, contract-related crimes and crimes against women and children, property-related crimes and crimes dependent on police action for detection. Here the performance indicator is detection rate for contact crimes. That is, the baseline is 56.99%. The estimated performance is detection rate increased by 3% to 60%. The target set here is 60%, translated in a hard figure of 406,621. The percentage of court-ready case dockets for contact crimes will be baseline 82.24%. The estimated performance of court-ready case docket to be increased by 3% to 35.24%. And the target set is court-ready case docket increased by 2% to 37.24%. The hard figure is 74,112. The conviction rate for contact crimes, the baseline is 73.65%. The estimated performance of conviction rate to be increased by 0.70% to 74.34%. The target set is the conviction rate to be increased by 1% to 75.34%, which is translated to 81,019. The next priority is effective investigation and detection of serious crimes, contact-related crimes, crimes against women and children, property-related crimes, and crimes dependent on police action. Here the performance indicator is detection rate for trio crimes. The baseline for the taken from the 2010-2011 financial year is 16.02%, which is translated in a hard figure of 10,900. The estimated performance indicator shows that the detection rate to be increased by 1.98% to 18%. The detection rate in terms of the target is to be increased by 5% to 23%, translated in a hard figure of 11,671. The percentage of court-ready cases docketed for trio crimes, the baseline is 37.74%, and the estimated performance of court-ready case docket should be increased by 3% to 40.74%. The court-ready case docket, in terms of the target, is to be increased by 3% to 43.74%. That is translated to 5,108. The conviction rate for trio crimes, the baseline is 70.27%, which is a hard figure of 1,815. The estimated performance conviction rate is to be increased by 0.25% to 70.52%, which is a hard figure of 1,820. The target set in this regard is the conviction rate to be increased by 0.5% to 71.02%. The hard figure in this regard is 1,825. The next performance indicator is the detection rate for crime against women 18 years and above. This is focusing on murder, attempted murder, all sexual offenses, common assault and assault GBH. The baseline for the 2010-2011 financial year, the performance was 71.20%, which is translated to a hard figure of 169,440. The estimated performance detection rate is to be increased by 0.8% to 72%. The hard figure will be 160,750. The target set for 2012-2013 is the detection rate to be increased by 0.5% to 72.5%. The hard figure will be 161,580. The next performance indicator is percentage of court-ready case docket for crimes against women 18 years and above for those crimes as indicated above. The baseline is 34.85%, which is a hard figure of 26,922. The estimated performance of court-ready case docket is to be increased by 3% to 37.85%, translated in a hard figure of 27,729. The target set for 2012-2013 is court-ready case docket to be increased by 2% to 39.85%, which will be a hard figure of 28,284. The conviction rate for these crimes is based on the performance of 2010-2011 of 72.92%, which is translated in a hard figure of 29,683. The estimated performance conviction rate should be increased by 0.9% to 73.01%. The hard figure in this regard is 29,720. The target set for 2012-2013 is to have the conviction rate increased by 0.50% to 73.51%, which is translated in a hard figure of 29,869. The next performance is to ensure effective investigation and detection. Detection of serious crimes and contract-related crimes against women and children property-related crimes and crimes dependent on police action. The performance indicator in this regard is detection rate for crimes against children under 18 years. Their crimes are the same as those that we look with regard to women above 18. The baseline in this regard is 77.42%, which is translated in the hard figure of 52,672. The estimated performance for 2011-2012 is the detection rate to be maintained at 77.42%, and the target set in this regard is to maintain it at 77.42%. The next performance indicator is percentage of court-ready case dockets for crimes against children under 18 years. The baseline in this regard is 21.66%, which is a hard figure of 12,549, and the estimated performance is court-ready docket to be increased by 3% to 24.66%, which is translated in a hard figure of 12,925. The target set for 2012-2013 is court-ready case docket to be increased by 1% to 25.66%, which is translated in a hard figure of 13,054. The next performance indicator is the conviction rate for crimes against children under 18. The baseline here is 69.52%, translated in a hard figure of 10,207. The estimated performance is to be increased by 0.52% to 70.04%. The target set in this regard for 2012-2013 is to have the conviction rate increased by 0.50% to 70.54%, which is translated to 10,311. The operational priorities, starting with the crime investigation, is to enhance development capabilities. In this regard, the following courses and the training manuals have been reviewed to assess the applicability and the practicality. The Detective Commander's Learning Program, the Resolving of Crime Rock, and the assessment criteria for trainees in the ROC at Graaff-Reinet was developed and applied to assess learners. The FCS learning program has been reviewed and aligned to new legislation. Coming to the detective commanders of identified stations, they were trained on commercial crime investigation learning program. This will assist to ensure that there is an understanding to deal with this type of complicated investigation. The monitoring of performance interventions focus at poor performance performing stations, the units to improve the performance of the detection rate, court ready rate, and the conviction rate are implemented. We shall also be ensuring that we continue to purify the wanted person database. This also shall pave way to focus on tracing the wanted suspects who are circulated and those who are known. We shall also be ensuring that there is an increase in tracing of the wanted person by means of obtaining and updating the latest information of the wanted suspects. We shall also be ensure that there is enhanced coordination of investigation. In this regard, crime scene investigation manual already compiled and circulated for utilization by all SAPS members who attend to crime scenes. further initiative is now to finalize the crime investigation manual to enhance the investigation of crime. We also need to strengthen the detectives, court case officers, to enhance trial readiness of case dockets and to reduce the withdrawal of cases in court, as well as the reduction of case backlogs. We shall also ensure that we roll out of the detective service centers to improve on the speedy and the quality investigation of reported cases and to attend to crime scenes. The quarterly performance review sessions with the provincial heads of detectives to monitor the achievements of the target. We also need to ensure that there is coordination of the investigation of cases with the DNA links and the IPIS leads. We shall also ensure that there is the strengthening of capacity with specific focus on the family violence, child protection and sexual offences units and the stop theft units. Here the FCS units are functional by a means of re-establishment, recruitment and mandate review. The stop theft units were realigned to geographically and the new units were established. We also need to ensure that we enhance capacity in the two above mentioned environments. Some of the former detectives were placed back to the detective units from the components within the SAPS to enhance the detective environment. We also need to intensify the recruitment to enhance capacity. There is a need to ensure that the marketing of the activities and successes of both the units are enhanced. Specific focus on engagement with the emerging farmers regarding legislation, branding of stock and reporting of crime will be enhanced. We shall also ensure that the conducting of cross-border operations between neighboring countries with the purpose of combating stock theft, recovering of stock, and repatriation of stolen and recovered stock is enhanced. Coming to cross-border operations, we need to be ensuring that we participate and cooperate in all SARCO cross-border operations in relation to vehicle crime, proliferation of firearms and drugs. This shall also ensure that we focus on the recovery and repatriation of stolen motor vehicles. We shall also ensure that we continue to identify and address criminal groupings responsible for cross-border crime. The section of cross-border operation within the component of specific crime investigation within a detective environment. Conduct intelligence-driven operations along the borderlines with South Africa to prevent stolen vehicles to leave and enter the Republic. Coming to crime stop and harmful related practices, we need to ensure that we enhance the capacity of crime stop to deal with crime line information and anonymous tip-offs. We also need to increase the utilization of the media with the broadcasting of wanted suspects as well as missing persons. We need to ensure that we enhance the capacity at provincial level to deal with the investigation of case dockets in relation to harmful related practices. Madam Chair, Honourable Members, I will now hand over to my colleague, the DPCI, to deal with the next slide.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Good morning. I'll be presenting on the sub-program Specialized Investigations. The strategic priority, specialized investigation of serious organized crime, commercial crime and corruption, the performance indicator, the strategic of corporate against of fraud and corruption for individuals within the
performance indicator, detection rate for serious commercial crime-related charges. The baseline is 68.4. The estimated performance was a detection rate between 40% and 50%, and our target would be a 50% detection rate. The percentage of court ready case data for serious commercial-related charges, the baseline was 25.6%. The estimated performance for court ready case data between 30% and 40%, our target is 30% court ready case data. The next indicator, percentage of registered serious organized crime project investigation. The baseline of successfully terminated was 50.3%. The estimated performance was 30% investigation successfully terminated, and the target for 12-13 would be 51% of the registered project successfully terminated. The strategic priority investigation of serious commercial cases where government officials are involved in procurement fraud and corruption related cases. The number of the performance indicator is the number of serious commercial crime related cases investigated where officials are involved in procurement fraud and corruption. This is a new indicator. The estimated performance was 50 investigations initiated, and the target would be that 50 cases investigated in 12-13. The next performance indicator, the number of serious commercial crime-related court-related cases where officials are involved in procurement fraud and corruption. It's also a new indicator. The estimated performance is 25 court-related cases, and the target is 25 court-related cases. The next performance indicator, value of assets and strength, where officials are involved in procurement fraud and corruption related cases. That's a new indicator. And the estimated performance was 125 million rand in asset expense, and the target is 125 million rand worth of asset expense received. The current flow of targets is to prevent and combat and investigate national priority offenses. Looking at the establishment, capacitating and maintenance of priority crime management centers in all provinces. We would like to enhance strength-based investigations facilitated by the TCMC, that is Priority Crime Management Center. We want to operate in a multi-disciplinary investigative team approach. We'd like to do project-based investigations, and the priority offenses focused on include illicit mining and precious metals, rhino poaching, narcotics, illicit cigarette smuggling, non-ferrous metal, serious violent crime, banking sector scheming, human trafficking, and vehicle crime. In terms of the investigation of serious commercial crime-related cases where officials are involved in procurement fraud and corruption-related cases, this relates to 100 individuals, the target has been set of 100 individuals to be convicted by the year 2040, and 5 million rand of assets must be seized in each of those cases. We would like to enhance collaboration with our partners, fabric and telephone service providers, to fast track our efficient profile cleaners. We want to follow the multidisciplinary investigative team approach, and we want to lobby for dedicated courts and prosecutors on these cases. In terms of investigating, gathering and analyzing of evidence relating to serious commercial crime, we want to investigate money laundering elements in crime, we want to investigate possible financial in crime, we want to enhance the financial and asset forfeiture investigation far from capacity as our head of supervisor in the provincial office. Once again, this is a multidisciplinary investigative team. Once enhanced collaboration with champion in aggressive commodity trade. Just like the last time, we've taken approach that we assign champion for all of our major prioritized trades. We've been investing in specialized trade forces and not the knowledge of super investigators to assess the trade priority. Once we develop and implement the national infrastructure for management of projects. Once we install project investigation culture within all of units, we'd like to reduce the organized crime rate so that it's consistent with our new approach. Once we identify our rapid operations, specifically our secondary good dealers. After investigating cases of serious fraud and corruption in J3's cluster, here we want to modify our care system to isolate the JCPS corruption cases. Once we have the implementation of the SAP and corruption action plan, specifically in the DCR, we want to communicate the work of our channels more effectively. We want to enhance our integrity management within the DCR. And we'd like to prioritize the identified risk within the higher environment. Combating of cybercrime, we want to establish and maintain a cyber capacity of the authorities, especially for acquisition. We want to participate in the National Banking Crime Task Force to deal with cybercrime in the financial sector. We can have enhanced collaboration between investigators internationally via the National Operational Committee in terms of the ATM IT response to act to IT skilling device in the sector. Want to focus on internationally within the cyber grant in collaboration with international law enforcement agencies. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, honorable members. I'm going to proceed from slide 119, starting with the sub-program of criminal records center. In this regard, the priority is improving the procedure for updating the records of offenders. The performance indicator is the percentage of original previous conviction reports for formerly charged individuals generated within 20 days. The baseline performance as for 2010-2011 was 81.5%. That is 994,020 of 1,220,205 previous conviction reports generated within 30 days. The estimated performance for 2011-2012 is 8% of original previous conviction reports generated within 20 days. The target set for 2012-2013 is 82% previous conviction report generated within 20 days. The operational priorities, we want to ensure that there is enhanced processing of evidence at crime scene, fast track processing of exhibits by crime scene laboratories, providing criminal history and related information, updating results of trial, administration and purification of wanted database. This is done in collaboration with the detective environment. Standardized criminal records and crime scene management services. Capacitate the criminal record center and crime scene management. Provide investigative psychology support and compliance with the provisions of the Explosives Act. Coming to the sub-program Forensic Science Laboratory, The strategic priority is improving the collection and the processing of crime scene evidence. The performance indicator is regarding the percentage of case exhibits, that is entries, processed by forensic services within 28 working days. The baseline strategy taken from phase 10 to 11 is 94% case exhibits entries processed by forensic analysts within 85 days. This is taken from the hard figure of 297,955 of 318,665. That means that 94%. The estimated performance for 20 taken from 2011-2012 is 92% of case exhibit entry processed by forensic service within 28 days. The target for 2012-2013 is 92% of case exhibit entry processed by forensic services within 28-14 days. The operational priority is the processing and utilization of forensic evidence, of which the target is set at 28-14 days. We also need to ensure that we capacitate the forensic laboratory. We need to ensure that we standardize the forensic services. And then we need to ensure the establishment of a victim identification center to assist in identifying missing and unidentified remains of bodies. Further priority is coming to the quality management. There is a need for the alignment of forensic processes planned to the international ISO standards, as indicated. We need to ensure the establishment and management of forensic database for effective governance. We need to ensure the provision of technical management expertise in respect of forensic processes, including the acquisition, the utilization and replacement of equipment and instruments. We need to ensure that the competent and proficient of analysts, examiners, and all employees in the division is enhanced. There is a need to provide strategic direction in terms of accreditation of forensic laboratories. Furthermore, there will be a need for creating forensic awareness, that is both internal and external. Coming to the objective of the CGS event, we need to ensure a forensic human resource capacity responsive to the needs of the criminal justice system, to provide support to the criminal investigation and judicial processes through effective crime scene management, to ensure the provision of reliable, timely forensic findings supporting the effectiveness of criminal justice, to establish a numbering mechanism for improved business performance and accreditation of the forensic services laboratory, to facilitate the modernization of systems, and to create forensic awareness. With regard to the criminal justice system allocation, the earmarked funding is for IT Forensic Science Laboratory and Criminal Record Center for the 2012-2013 is 1.1 billion. And then the acquisition in there is the Forensic Science and the Criminal Record Center is 542 million for the 2012-2013. And then the compensation is something that as you said, the 300 million, which is that total figure. The additional personnel that was NSA, which is what we actually needed, was in the region of 800 personnel. That is our week. This is informed by the 2011, 2012, where we had actually enlisted 750 with both the forensic and laboratory information team, and the criminal represents 548. Madam Chair, honorable members, that concludes the presentation of our crime detective service to get problems. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for another one. As the journalist said, this is our submission for the plan 2012-18 on the stage of the call. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. Thank you, President. Let me thank the President. My first question has to do with the intensifying of recruitment. My question is, who chooses who becomes a detective? And does that person want to be a detective? Why I'm asking that is, what we receive the position, we find some detectives who say, I don't want to be a detective. My next question is, who decides when should detectives go for training? When we visit the position, we find that in some cases, some detectives only had this first crush, this 2 weeks training, and that's it. And they are expected to perform optimally. Who decides when must they go for an additional training? My next question is, all because of the forensic lab, do you have backlog as of now? My next question is, do you have hesitation strategy?
I don't think that's how subject it'll be executed.
done on the yoga, but that was the yoga. And we're still sitting and we've got nothing on the table. I'd like to know if you've got any input in that regard. And looking at the fact that detectives also are obliged to hand over blood and other materials to the health ministry and the health ministry laboratory. Unlike yours, they are an unmitigated disaster. In fact, if you ever have to try and phone them, they don't ring 50 times and they pick up the phone and hang up with you. So they are useless. It can take up to 3 years to get a simple bottle of blood. So that, of course, has a huge impact on the work around the system. I want to know what's happening there. Are you working with them? Are you looking at all to maybe take some of the work over because they're simply not doing the job? And it's got a huge impact on the investigation by the detectives. And finally, looking at the detection rates for last year, 54,000 attacks on women and children, only 21% came to court waiting. That's from a detection rate of 69%. And for rape of women and children, only 18% court waiting. Overall attacks, serious crime, there was 51% detection rate. Of that number, just 60% were court waiting. Now, I couldn't find, I believe, less than our last year, the conviction rate, which we had asked you to insert. I don't know why you removed them, but we go to
rights, commission rights have been included. It's something that we also always never been there. And we really feel that it will itself also confidence by the public if we think about it and we think about it. To me, it's more important that we have something to work towards to. On if we finish up enough in the middle of all this, but at least they try and get it. So thank you for that. You know, I really think it helps us. It also shows that one can have been so tall. Very possible to have been so tall. Rather than a removing target, because inside the police is not handled properly, like the weighing on drugs in stores, address the problem with the wrong weighing on the drugs. Rather than removing the target as a whole. So I really want to say I really appreciate that. However, I do believe we still have challenges. Honourable, yeah, certainly, but I think we need to know how many detectives do we have currently. And then we ask the question as well, where are we going to? What is it that we want to achieve? So how many numbers of detectives ideally in 190,000 plus police service should we have? And it's not only about numbers, yet it's also about quality. So again, the second part of that question is the training and a specific year around the branch commanders. We still get too many stations where branch commanders have not undergone management training or even branch command training at all. So I would be interested, I know General Sander most probably will come rather from the training side than from your own, but where do we stand in terms of the number of branch commanders that you have and the number that people need to be trained and in commanding the detective? We can see from the station, where you've got a good commander, branch commander, you'll be needed support. Where you don't have a good branch commander and you don't have the steam spirit, for the true one is an example of that. You really have this detection rate, collection rate, etc. This is the third question. Why the low figure of crime against children and women and the lady? The figure that your target is much lower for children, and I understand it's more difficult to get evidence from children, etc. But why do we have that lower figure? I think the figure is the difference between them and for adults. Sexual offenses is worrying. Can you give us an indication what the reason is why? Typically, we still, and members of the race, we still get to places where detectives say we don't want to be there. That comes to me back to also the whole issue of career passing, or the lack of career passing. I doubt whether many students want to leave the college. I've had a discussion with whomever that say, okay, what is it that you ultimately want to do with INSA, and how are we going to put you on the track to get there so that you can become that? Are we addressing this issue specifically around the detectives? You can't make certain who don't want to be a detective. You can't force certain to be a detective. They won't be a detective. I'm also glad Secretary Lamont commends the detectives for the fact that they have quarterly review on the targets with the provincial aid from the provincial detective commanders on achieving the targets. Because I think early intervention is what is needed to step throughout. If you don't monitor on at least a quarterly basis, how far off you are or not, you're not going to achieve those targets. So I think that is a very positive thing, and I would like to commend that. I think the question has been offered. I'm also interested in, we heard it last year as well, about you're going to enhance stocks, you know, you're going to enhance the issues. But I think we need to find out how. Then how is now the important thing. The same with the decision. It's one thing to shift the money and to make money available, but to how. I think to some extent the decision
but I understand the complexity of the investigation that the courts are involved in, and given the situation, the improvement, so that the previous situation in terms of supply chain management, I would have thought you could have discovered $5 million resources just by investigating some of your own colleagues and former colleagues in terms of supply chain management. Quite frankly, and I would like to see that that's also focused on knowing where there is corruption in such a solid. And you know that supply chain management is one of them. And I'm not saying under the current management. I'm not even saying under the previous one. But we know there are challenges within supply chain management. And I do believe the chairperson of my base issue of the more than R100 million equipment that was bought with a quotation, there in itself is one place for you to achieve that R5 million recovery and 100 people involved. Maybe but I'm worried about the solvent board. And I say that in while I'm also saying that knowing and understanding the complexity of the investigation. But I would have thought we want to see an increase in the solvent board and not keeping that same level. Can you explain that to us, please? Your ISO. I'm now spending time with the laboratories. Your achievements of adhering to the ISO qualifications, et cetera. How far are we? Because this thing has now been coming since prior to 1999. It's been on the agenda every single year. And I think we need to get to a point where you say to us, and that's what I'm actually talking about. By this time, we will have. By this time, we will have. And the same with your accreditation role, because I think that's what's keeping you back from doing it. So, can we get a clear plan of action in terms of this? Jefferson, I want to go back to substance school. I know it's one of the questions that I asked on the first day, but because of time, we haven't received the answer. And I seriously would request that when we get that answer, that we also be taken on board in terms of how you're going to address this issue going forward. What is the solution? Because we can't deny the fact that chain of evidence is what is about when we get it forward. Now, I sometimes say to say, if I leave politics, I'm going to become a defense lawyer. Advisors of the things were. All I'll tell them is, okay, let's say we want the case investigated. First thing you do is ask it to see the substance. Let's start there. Because that is, I think, one of the weaknesses of this stage. Often, is the substance. And I really believe that we need to get to a point where some can tell us how we are going to address this issue. If it needs to be moved to the detective environment, then that needs to be done. I'm talking about the problem, but not anything else. But the fact of the matter is you sometimes have legislation, and the person who's in charge of the substance is still just don't care. It might have become a storeman instead of realizing the importance of the evidence that they have. We really, General Moon, sorry, but General Moon knows that. I went to a station in Paul, where on visiting the subspecies store, I found three ladies for children that had been lying and not been sent to the police department to borrow the evaluation for money. One of them here. The problem is, the reason why I do this is, for me, it's evidence. It can lead to some ahead, because when they know it's coming, they see how the source from, you know, they move the drugs, etc. But we still want, for instance, I can't get the drugs, I'm not talking about DARPA, of other drugs, in the city stores, that are not consented for evaluation. And I mean, as far as I know, your instruction is 48 hours at the most. And I'm talking drugs that will lie there for months or years. And we still find in such certain stores, for instance, an example that I can use is that where you see that this evidence, this drug, 15 mandates have been destroyed. Signature of two people by warrant officer so and warrant officer so and so. Then you can see that what happens is we find the drug on the phone. This is finally the entity the register for the drug. But your evidence is empty of the register.
Let's just go ahead and the time of course, I hear it. Go home.
Thank you. Have a look if you want.
about the fingerprint? No, but before the presentation, there was also a little present the status of the beast. Then the information was where are we? Hello. Hello. Yeah. Okay. So now the final decision. Okay, Mara, yari, no? We agree. Okay. We can send it to you, Bomeke. Because I wonder, yeah, so much better, let us have yeah, Kapwa.
Thank you very much. I understand it is Kutela Mazeti, and we have formed catering with Baslake. So those who could not get tea or have tea, they will be free just to go at the back there and just make tea for themselves. And it has been members would want to add one or two questions.
It's just one item that I was wondering when we receive the responses. If they could just explain to me, somebody could explain in the statistical analysis. When we had the provincial heads in Parliament recently, I looked at the detection rate in the Free State. It was 56%. Of that, just 36% of the cases got to court, so that's 20 out of 100. And of the 20, just 27% were convicted. So out of 100 crimes, they arrested 57 and 5 people were convicted. That's 5 out of 100. And then I look at your detection and your conviction rates, et cetera, which seem so high and your targets would seem so high. Is it that certain provinces do really badly and others do really well to pull your figures up? Or I need some information about their analysis of the statistics, because what the provincial heads are telling us and what we're reading here, they just don't match.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. My question is also in terms of the detective. Chairperson, we lose detectives due to the fact that if a detective, the environment allows detectives up to a point promotions, and thereafter, if the detective wants to go forward in life, he or she needs to become either a station commander or go into management, etc., etc. In that way, we are losing well-trained, experienced detectives. Now, I know personally that I've, in a number of budget debates, have been asking such to look at the possibility of promotion within detectives that is not necessarily rank-orientated. And I remember I raised this question previously as well, and Bielefeld is an example of it. Somebody who wants to be a detective, that's what they want to do. They're not interested in going into management. They're not interested in becoming a station commander. But they also deserve and want to, as any other human being, go forward in life. Is that looking at this? Are you looking at the possibility of a promotion system within the detectives, even if it means you take away ranks in the detectives in the traditional sense of the word, and you start promoting them so that they can get the promotion but remain detectives? I mean, it's interesting to find out how many station commanders have previously actually been detectives. And they're not doing that management duty because they actually want to do it, but that's the one way to get ahead. So I'm really interested in that answer. Are the detectives themselves looking at that? Have you made proposals in this regard? And if you've done, or if you haven't done, why not? Because, I mean, really, there are detectives that raise this with us even at station level. And I think we need to look at it. Throughout the world, there is models available that we can look at as well in terms of how other police services deal with the promotion of detectives. We can no longer allow the detectives be the Cinderella of the police service. And as we've declared this year the year of the detectives, there's no time as good as the now to actually start addressing that issue.
Thank you, Acting National Commissioner.
Thank you, Chairperson. the generals will be attending to the questions that have been asked by the members. But maybe just to latch on the last comment or question that has been asked. In our promotion, salary increases, all these things cost money. If you compare that versus the unemployment in South Africa, where you need to employ people. Now the question is, do you promote somebody to get more money, or you employ the unemployed so you can get the little? Yeah, well, somebody else might be able to respond to that. But to answer the question, as management, we are looking at improving the conditions of the detectives in terms of their career path, because unfortunately not everybody can be promoted to a position of being a commander. However, everybody might want to benefit, so there are issues of allowances that we are also looking at to try and retain the detectives. Indeed, if we stop a lot of things, honorable members, Jefferson, we can promote all detectives and they all can be captains. That can be done. But it's impossible to do it. So as a result, you are going to find but a number of detectives that might not be promoted just because of command structure. There has to be more that will be in a junior level and less that will be in command structures. So it's a pyramid. We are focusing on that, like I said earlier, the issues of allowances to try and retain them, which is something of more than what an ordinary police officer would be getting, to retain them within environment, regardless of the position, as an incentive. It is a challenge, Chairperson. I think when we presented on the program one, we spoke about the career streams that we want to develop, so that we keep only those that want to be detective, undergo training, get the relevant experience to be promoted, so that we avoid situations where we promote Ntlantla Mkhwanazi, who has never been a detective, to command the detective. We're trying to limit in that fashion. Chairperson, we have challenges, I must agree. When the detective is going to investigate a case, okay, and they certify that the investigation is complete and he takes the case docket to court, and only to be told by the court that there's not enough evidence. You go back to the investigation, you send it back. There are many of these instances that we've heard about, spoken about in the country, and makes the life of a detective difficult. Because somebody sitting in court is going to decide, no, this hard work of yours as a detective is not sufficient. You must go and dig more. So you end up not knowing actually who's right, who's wrong. We've been told in many instances of late that we don't have right to investigate certain case dockets. We must refer some case dockets to the Inspector General of Intelligence because we don't have a jurisdiction, and we do that. And we take those case dockets, we pass them back, and we send them back to court again, and we sit and wait. That's all what a police officer can do. And we leave it there. So there's other powers beyond us that will decide whether there's a prosecution or not. There are powers beyond us that are going to decide whether there's a conviction or not. It's all good. We present before the committee, we say we want to achieve this target of conviction. But we are not prosecutors, we are not judges. Unfortunately. But Chairperson and members, I'm going to request Gerald Libia, together with the team, to be able to respond to some of the questions. And Chairperson, your question that I think on the screen currently that you asked with regard to the numbers, yes, indeed, we had planned to train, but again, the budget being controlled by Treasury, I will allow the CFO to be able to explain on this part. Maybe you should start before Gerald Bien, explaining in terms of the target that we wanted to have. We wanted to train 800, recruit additional employees within this environment. As you can see above, that the money that we thought we might use for that 300 million rand that was for compensation has been moved to detective environment. Now, some of the things we get instructed, you do it like this, and you don't have an option. So I'll allow your permission to a person to get the CFO to be able to explain this specific one. And when it's done, then we'll allow General Libia to respond to our General Kennedy.
Maybe before that, Acting National Commissioner, just on the career pathing for detectives, and probably the answer that is management. That is the answer we got last in 2010. That is management. You are dealing with this matter. And probably the question, therefore, that should follow is, what has this management done since then? It is so that we know exactly as to, because that is the answer. The question that Honorable Annelies is asking is the question that was asked, I think, it could have been even in 2009, but I'm sure about 2010. And the answer that we got was that the management is doing something, this management. Now, you will probably not say, but this management was there. Probably it's time that we are now told exactly as to what this management has done so far in practical terms.
Chairperson, if I might add to that as well, I hear what the Commissioner is saying, the Acting National Commissioner is saying in terms of looking at, what do they call it, incentives for the directors to stay there. But I think we must think outside of the box. I'm sorry, I really believe we should look outside of the box for solutions. What I'm basically saying to you and asking you is that we look at the possibility of a flat structure for detectives rather than a pyramid structure. There's no reason why, because SAPS is a pyramid structure, why you can't have a structure within SAPS that is not a pyramid structure, but that it's a flat structure. And that you can stay a detective. That is what you're called. You're called a detective, but you can be, once you qualify for promotion, and I'm not talking about promoting detectives for the sake of promoting detectives, but once a detective qualifies for promotion, that promotion is within the detective environment. It's not moving that person out of the detective environment, because if he or she wants to go forward in life, they need to now apply for a vacant position as a station commander. That is basically what we're asking. And I accept if there's nothing on the table, there's nothing on the table. But what I'm pleading with you is, let's look at something. Let's try and see whether we can't find something. You came to us many years, year after year, and you tell us you lose good detectives to private investigating companies, to forensic companies, etc. And you're not going to retain them by giving them a special allowance. You're going to retain them by making sure that they can grow financially within the detective environment. That's how you're going to ensure that. So I'm pleading with you that management look at that possibility as well.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, we are looking at it, like I said. I was just explaining the challenges that one has. The prioritization, you've got 200,000 employees, and you've got a certain percentage of detectives that you need to satisfy, and you must satisfy the others. You've got unions that are going to be taking you on if you are making privileges for the others, not for the other ones. So I just want the committee to also understand that as much as we are trying, it might have been said in 2010, which I believe since then there's been a number of promotions that have taken place within an environment, but still it will not satisfy the big percentage of detectives. That is the reality. We are working in a paramilitary environment. There has to be command structure, so we cannot be flat. It is the unfortunate. But nevertheless, we honourable member will give you all the research of the best practices around the world. We'll present it here, so that we can show you that what are the challenges that you are facing. Permission, with your permission, Chairperson Jared Kitty will present.
Thank you, Chair. If we look at that specific blue slide that's on the screen as well in front of you, let's first start from the bottom up. The total is the total amount specifically allocated and appropriated that we have received from Parliament eventually in this regard, and obviously in the 12-13 financial year, Parliament must still decide on it. But if one look, one would see it was 900 million in 2010-2011, 1.850 billion in 11-12, and then in the current financial year, 2012-2013, it's 1.942 billion. Now then the question arises as to how are these amounts apportioned. If we look at the 2010-2011 financial year, it was 460 million for IT, for FSL and CRC. That 460 million was with TMS. Then you had FSL and CRC operational expenses, 340 million, and then 100 million, what we apportioned there for the appointment of mainly analysts in order to also capacitate the human side more than normally in terms of the CJS. That brought us to a 900 million, which was then expended. In that specific year, 700 people were appointed in this regard, in this initiative. In the second financial year, one had 1.110 billion or 1,110 million for IT once again, IT of the CJS. One then also had 540 million for both FSL and CRC operational expenses, and then 200 million, basically in essence 100 million carried through and 100 million for new personnel, which brought us to the 750 personnel appointed in that specific year. When one gets to the current financial year, we initially, when we submitted the budget, put a 300 million there for compensation to continue with that program by saying that 300 million should be under compensation. Again, the 100 million carried through for both years, and then also 100 million there for carry through, and 100 million for new personnel, which would have constituted the 800. The National Treasury in that regard said to us, no, we should try and find it someplace else, for instance in the normal budget, because this CJS should not be used from now on for compensation. So we had to move the 300 million in this regard for CJS purposes, such as improving the crime scene and analysis. We moved it to detectives. So that means that 1.1 billion for IT for the CJS, 4542 for operational in terms of the CJS at the FSL and CRC environment, and then the 300 million for compensation was then moved to detectives in the main estimate, obviously remaining within the same amount. That in essence say that for the 800 that we have there, we will have to make, and that is part of the plan that we have referred to, we will have to make a plan in the current financial year, otherwise we will not be able to appoint those people. Be that as it may, there is an amount of, I think, 1,400 to 1,200 people that will be appointed, but we will have to see how we get around that aspect. But that is the scenario in terms of the earmarked funding for the CJS. If you ask about spending in 2011-12 regarding the CJS environment, the amount that was spent there from the 1.850 billion was 1.499, in essence 1.5 billion. It reflects an 81% spending level, which provides you with the 350 million under, which will be deposited back to the National Revenue Fund and requested where there are commitments that can be submitted to the National Treasury for reappropriation in the mini budget in this regard. So this is in essence what has been spent. Obviously it will be in detail outlaid in the legislative oversight and in the statements that we provide at the time. Now you might ask, if it's 81, what was the spending at the IT FSL environment? The IT FSL environment had an under of 258. The CJS FSL has an under of 56, the CJS CRC 35 in essence, and obviously compensation had not because the people were appointed, so there was no under or over in this regard. So from the 1.850, 81% was eventually spent as at year end. Those figures that I've just given to you will obviously also be included in the annual report. But I think I have addressed. Then your next question was the following.
Sorry, Chair, could I just have a follow-up on that 800 million? We were told last night at 8:30 by General Standard that in fact, as of January, there will be no further hiring within the SAP. In fact, the aim is to not dismiss, but through natural attrition, rid SAPs of 9,000 members. So what I'm not understanding is, why is it you have 800 million set aside for 2012-13, when in fact you won't be hiring? Is that in only relation to the final, I believe there's a final hiring in January of next year, and then we were told no more. So how can you have to set aside 800 million for new personnel when we're told there won't be any? And in fact, because you won't be filling in any posts as people retire, die, move to other jobs, etc., there will be an enormous amount of money still available. So could you just draw me a line between what you're saying and what General Sunder told us last night, please?
I shall. Chairperson?
I'm still the chairperson until 7 minutes. And therefore, what you're actually telling us now is that suddenly FSL is not going to hire. It's not going to be able to hire those people that they need when we have a new act that must be implemented during this year. What does that mean? And can I also be told, what is the impact of this decision? You seem to be saying it was not your decision. Was it the Treasury decision? And what is the impact of this decision to the department? Because it doesn't matter that it's Treasury, I disagree with Treasury. Not for FSL, when we have so many challenges.
May I continue? Firstly, the linkage between what I have just said and what General Standard said. We work on a model where we say, for instance, in the vicinity of 5,000 people resign every year. That is the natural attrition. Of that 5,000, just to break even, you have to appoint another 5. If you want to grow, you have to appoint more than 5,000. Now, the cut that that has been introduced on the police will imply that we will not be able to appoint the 5,000. But what we will be able to appoint is 1,200 of the 5,000, which still implies a reduction. So General Thomas is absolutely correct. It still implies a reduction, but there is a 1,200, if I'm not mistaken, just above 1,200 that will be replaced. Now, the argument that comes to the forefront, will this 800 form a charge against that 1,200 or not? That's why I say the committee will have to take a decision at some point, because there will be a reduction. Yes, Chairperson, the National Treasury instructed us. Obviously, in the consultation process, one try also to convince, but nevertheless, we were instructed. There is written proof in this regard. So what we are saying, that 300 million will then be, should be with a general detective, or we place it with a general detective, and also to enhance the operational side of the CJS in this regard. In terms of the 800, it indicates a need there, and I think up to now we've made significant inroads in capacitating this environment, but the 800 would require further assessment and maybe elaboration if need be in the mini-budget in the current financial year. to even further engage with Treasury to say, you know, can we get additional funds, but then unforeseen and unavoidable come to the forefront, or at least in the new MTF, as I said, which starts again at in June, July. This, in essence, is a scenario in this regard. But General Pashlani and his team also rightfully so wanted to indicate that that is a need in order to continue with the capacitating in this regard. The instruction by the Treasury can also be provided, you should be so desired.
Listen, just to get clarity, I didn't understand General Starnet to say after the 1,200 there will be no more further employment. I mean, you're not going to stop training new police officers, because that's not what I understand. The last for that year then, but the year thereafter you're going to employ more people, and the year thereafter you're going to employ more people. Otherwise, I mean, your problem is solved. Then you just take the training institution's money and you do what you need to do. But that's not what I understood General Stoner to say.
And I would have thought that, I'm not sure, I would have thought that the CJS revamp budget is a ring-fenced budget.
Not just ring-fenced by the National Treasury, but specifically appropriated by Parliament, so you can't touch what you don't use, you deposit back to the chair.
And that is why the question will then say, but really, why is it now shifted to detectives? One, but two, say, it's 300 million for compensation. I mean, it's really for compensation. What impact probably has this got to FSL? And actually, I'm asking this question because we have a new act that must be implemented. We have a new act that has not been implemented. Honorable Kolapanat is also correct to ask a question about the DNA Act that we went to Canada and whatever to find out as to what best practices they are doing. And we are here. Now we are told that the compensation, the money for compensation is then moved. I just want to get that because I completely disagree, 150% disagree with this. It doesn't matter as to whether it's Treasury, but I really am disagreeing with the move. And I want to believe that really SAPS should have then removed or shifted this fund to elsewhere. I think it should have remained within FSL, because I think we have in this country been having a problem in that aspect, and we are addressing a problem that has been there. And I really do personally have interest in how FSL is functioning, because this is one other area that is being politicized a great deal, and I can't understand as to why then must we be shifting funds from FSL to elsewhere, particularly for compensation. Because what it means is that you're not going to hire people again. We were told last year that the plan for FSL is to hire this figure and that figure and that figure. And we were told by FSL that figure is going to be addressing 1, 2, 3. Now we are coming beginning of the year. No, it's not going to happen. What else is not going to happen?
Thank you, Jefferson. I think we are all being controlled one way or another by some other people. But still, that does not necessarily mean that we should not continue engaging with them to try and make sure that we get the necessary resources to be able to execute our functions. I can imagine the challenges that we're going to face with this decision. But Jefferson can assure the committee that we'll continue engaging with Treasury to make sure that what we put out as a plan on having 800 employees within FSL that we have planned for this year, that is realized. So we'll try and engage with them. It's unfortunate when the CFO says that we get the instruction in black and white. There are other people that control the buttons and what goes where and how it comes. But I think if we want to know exactly the impact of this, Jarrod Pashlana is in a better position to, because it disturbs our plans. Unfortunately, that's what we intended doing. That's why it is reflected on the screen that this was intended. And it moved from there to there. so that it can be explained here, because it's one of the things that's frustrating him. With your permission, Chair, maybe I should allow Gerald Patlana to be able to respond on the impact of this.
Sorry, I think we need to look very seriously and very quickly at a way forward. I think that this committee needs to attempt to assist and pull in the Treasury and ask them to explain themselves. I don't think we can have the Treasury determining that the SAPs actually won't have the ability to sign on sufficient experts to implement, as you say, the bills that we spend day and night passing. It is absolutely outrageous that we're finding now that you've received an instruction that even though Parliament has jumped through 1,000 hoops to get the legislation through, the fingerprint bill, we've got the Glenister judgment coming up, we've got the DNA bill, all of these need experts, realignment, new staff, and now we're told no, Treasury says you can't. I don't think we can leave it to SAPs because they've already got their instruction, they're waving it there in black and white. I think we actually as a portfolio committee need to ask them to come to us and ask them to rethink, because it's up to us to pass the bill. And we cannot pass a bill which is going to hamstring the SAPs from implementing the bills we've just passed. I mean, we can't pass the budget if indeed the budget is not aligned with what they have to do. What is the point? It's absolutely outrageous what we're hearing today. So I would strongly advise that this committee pull in the people who took this decision, specifically who signed that piece of paper, and ask them to explain themselves and say, no, we're not going to sign off this budget unless you realign it with what they actually have to do. They have now been hamstrung and they cannot implement the bills we've passed. I find this step autocratic and absolutely outrageous in the face of the reality of the situation SAPs are facing.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. Well, I first need to appreciate your support on this matter, because it has got far-reaching implications for us. That these numbers were to grow the capacity in response of the Act, the Forensic Act, the fingerprint part, as well as the bill. And if we were to do all the things that are expected of us, we need those people. There was a question earlier raised on backlog. Just to give you an indication, in one of our disciplines, biology, DNA, we have started seeing an increase because of the increased volumes that are being sent to the laboratory by the station, correctly so, because those exhibit samples cannot lie in 13 stores, they must come to the laboratory. Now, with the limited capacity which is there, they are overstretched, and it's beginning to impact negatively on us. Amongst others, we were sourcing overtime out of that compensation part to stretch them, but you can't stretch them forever because they are human. They are going to burn out. Our resolve to retain the experts in the environment is down the drain if we are not going to get that, because we will not continue to be as attractive as we were since somewhere last year. It means we are going to lose those people where we have spent a lot of money in terms of training them. And not that it is not happening, it has already started happening. So I can just agree with the view that the honourable members are raising. Until the end of March, my plan was to go and hire those people. I got an email to say, you don't have this money anymore. And my question is, how then am I expected to continue improving the environment if I do not have those resources? Thanks, Chair.
We
Commissioner, Commissioner, we understand that you're saying it's National Treasury will consider everything as the portfolio committee's way. We disagree with the move. We are of the strong view that FSL must be strengthened in many ways than one. So we'll do everything possible. We don't support that. I definitely will not support that. We'll do everything possible to look into this matter. We think that FSL has got to be strengthened. It's one area that that is specializing in one other area, I must say, that is also specializing within SAP, and we need those services. And they have direct impact in the manner in which we'll be able to improve our conviction rate and any other rate for that matter. So we disagree with this move completely. So I personally disagree completely. We'll move on to our questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. With the permission, Gerald, the BFD.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. I will deal with four questions, and the rest of the questions will be dealt with by the Divisional Commissioners of Forensic Services and Detective Service. Starting with the one talking on what are the detectives themselves doing in order to retain the personnel within the detectives. Honorable members, we have said as the detectives, the Deputy National Commissioner, the Divisional Commissioners of this environment, as well as the Deputy Provincial Commissioners for Crime Detection. And then we have interrogated this aspect, and we came with a team that is going to put down a proposal in place so that this proposal can be tabled before management and say, this is how we think we can be able to retain the skills that are there, that the people will not be motivated to want to leave the detective environment. So this particular team is looking at various issues such as what is that which we need to ensure that we retain the personnel. They will also be interrogating the issue of career pathing. Obviously, they will involve the necessary environment dealing with that one. They also look at the issue of incentives. Among all these things include the dress and the like, as they are supposed to be working in civilian clothes. And so they are looking at various things to say, what is that which we need to be done to ensure that we retain the skills within the detectives. I have heard the Honorable Member indicating that in this environment, we don't necessarily need the hierarchy like we have in visible policy. I think that is the line of argument we have been advancing in the past, that we think that the detectives need to be dealt with differently. And we were citing as an example, saying that when the South African Police Service was to take over the personnel from the defunct DSO, they came with a various ranks, majority of them on a colonel's rank. And those officers holding those ranks are prepared to conduct investigation. They don't want to be in charge. They want to conduct the investigation. So we were arguing along those lines. But this is something that we are working on, and then it will be tabled before management to interrogate and see what is that which needs to be done. We have given them the date of July 2012. Honorable members, the question of the detectives that are being placed back at detective environment. We have realized as management that many detectives have left the detective environment for, we can say, if they were leaving the organization, for greener pastures, but for hire.
position elsewhere. Some of them were obviously becoming station commanders, and some of them other administrative posts outside the detective environment. So as management, we said, we agreed as a top management, the provincial commissioners and the divisional commissioners, as well as the deputies, that let's get them back into the detective environment. So what we had to do was to put a project in place so that we don't necessarily take everybody who have left the detectives, because some of them, you don't need them in the detective environment. So as a result, there was that process that we have done to ensure that we properly select those that still belong in the detective environment and they can function perfectly in the detective environment. So this is how we have embarked on that project. We managed to get those that everybody agreed that they are still suitable to be in the detective service. Of course, with the understanding that we didn't want to not unnecessarily paralyze the visible policies, because some of them, although they were detectives, when you put them as a station commander, they become so effective that you don't want to remove that one. So that is the project that we embarked on, which answered the question, why did we have to return some of the detectives who have left this environment? The other question was, do you have a detection strategy to increase this detection rate? Yes, in the crime detection environment, we do have a detection strategy. I can cite that the detection itself is in pillar number 8. There are 10 pillars that we have embarked on and agreed that these are the things that as crime detection environment we want to be focusing on. And among those things that we are focusing on is this pillar number 8 that focus on the detection. And then some of the issues that this pillar is dealing with is like the publication of the wanted suspects, so that it is not only the police who have got access to the system who help find the wanted suspects, but we also needed a way of inviting the community, say, that assist in tracing these wanted suspects. So it has got a variety of activities that are taking place there. Database that we purify and the like. The last question was the 47% of cases in the lower courts that were said to be returned to the detectives, which suggests that this figure that we are putting forward and say that they are court-ready cases, it is low because of those cases that have been returned. Obviously, it is something that may need to be explained so that this measurement is understood in a proper context. On Monday, I did not arrive in time because I had to stand in the witness box to go and testify on, among others, why at times the court will find that certain cases are not at court when they are supposed to be at court. So during that submission of evidence, we also highlighted to the magistrate that there are some mechanisms in place. Among them has to do with this court case officers. That there we have a court case officers that has been placed in certain courts. It's not all the courts. But in those courts that we have, they are there to assist to ensure that these shortcomings that might bypass the detective commanders, they detect there and correct, including the detecting that there are supposed to be court cases that are caught, which we are not seeing them. You do that before the court date arrives. So say our cases are supposed to be there at least 2 days before the court date. So that gives you time to ensure that whenever a particular case is not there available, this court officer can actually find out what became of that particular case docket. The cases that had been placed there at court also had to do with the 48-hour rule. Within 48 hours after the suspect has been arrested, must appear in court. Otherwise, the detention becomes unlawful. And then it's not necessary. Whenever a case is reported, and then you effect an arrest, it's not always possible that all the investigation is completed by the first court appearance. So, in that regard, you will find that a lot of cases appearing for the first time in the lower courts still need further investigation. And to be investigated further, they need to be postponed and returned back to the detectives for investigation. So the number itself, we shall have seen that the figure seems to be low, like 29,000 court ready. You see, but this is too low. But when we say conviction, we say 300,000 conviction, but court ready, we say 29,000. So we are talking what is ready at that particular time, which means that those 300,000 that we have seen convictions on were ready during the particular financial year. So I needed to be answering on those four questions, and then the divisional commissioners will deal with the rest in the environment. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Libya. I can see that you responding to our questions with confidence. And honestly speaking, I think we have to appreciate the fact that your indicators and targets are exactly what we've spoken about in our previous meeting. And for us, it says that you have taken into cognizance our engagement with the department, particularly the detective services. And for that, really, we want to commend you and we want to appreciate the fact that we will ask questions. However, I think we have got to appreciate the fact that we have targets that actually are going to make our life very easy as the oversight body. We really want to commend you for that.
Thank you, Chairperson. With your permission, Lieutenant General Munu, present.
Madam Chair, honourable members, good morning. Madam Chair, on the question of the identified of members to join the detectives, I must agree that previously we did allocate members to the detectives without really interviewing them. We decided that 30% should go to the detectives and we put 30% there. Because if you ask a member to go to the detectives, most likely he or she will not want to go. But as from last year, we have now started recruiting members at the training colleges where we put them through we first mark up the detective service, we put them through a psychometric test to see their ability, and then we choose them to become detectives. What happens most of the time that when they finish the detective training previously, they realize that there is a lot of work in the detective and they decide not to be detectives. But lately, as we started with a new process where we mark up these environment, the detective environment, and we choose them at the training colleges and then send them to Krafranet where they are first trained before they go into the uniform environment. Once you expose them to a certain environment, they become too used to that environment and do not want to leave them. And we saw that there is very few, can I say dropouts, if I may use the term, that goes back to the visible policing environment. It should be, as we said, a detective, to become a detective, it should be your choice, and you should you shouldn't be forced to. And if the honourable members say that at stations there is still members that say they do not want to be in the detective, I would not dispute that, because we have a lot of old detectives in the detective environment. Regarding the stop test units, whether we liaise with the air wing in the rural areas, as the honourable committee will be aware that the rural safety strategy was developed, and the rural safety strategy is a combination of all the role plays in the police service. The air wing is utilized if and when it is required, and I must say that to my knowledge we do not have any problems when we approach them. So if we have operations, which we do have from time to time in certain environments, like on the South African Lesotho borders, we utilize the air wing and they are available. So during operations, they are always available, and when we need them, even on other cases, besides on stop test related issues, where we require their assistance, they are available to assist us. I have examples where we utilize them. Regarding the conviction rate of the FCS, the question of the honourable member, the conviction rate for 18 and above was 73%, under 18 was 70.04%. Regarding prior to it being... Prior to,
I beg your pardon, I didn't quite hear those figures. May I ask if they're repeated, please?
The conviction rate for 18 years and above is 73%. Under 18 is 70.04%. I'm unable to tell you what was the figure prior to the restructuring of the FCS units, because I do not have the conviction rates when they were restructured, if I may use the term. Yes. Regarding the units, we have 176 clusters, and at each cluster we have a unit established. I have a total figure of personnel at 2,155 in the FCS unit. We were 1,864. We are now at 2,155 members. Madam Chair, the issue on the blood regarding the Department of Health, we had numerous meetings with the department. We are part of the review of the CJS, where there is a committee that is involved in this. I know the Minister of Health has taken it personally, taken it in the sense that they are visiting the labs to ensure what is the problem to try and reduce the backlog. We also engaged with the NDPP, where we have decided, in order for these cases not to be withdrawn on the first appearance, we have, in consultation with them, came to an agreement that all drunken driving cases will be remanded for the first appearance will be in 6 months in the future. So that we hope in that 6 months the Department of Health will be able to furnish us with the alcohol blood report. There are serious backlogs in Johannesburg and Pretoria. From my engagement, I was told that they are looking at establishing a lab in KZN. So we hope that that will be established and will relieve some of the pressures. It will also save us in the sense of our budget to travel to Johannesburg from KZN to bring up samples for analysis. Madam Chair, on the question of fully trained detectives, we have in the FCS environment, we have 1,727 members trained in the FCS for the Family Violence, Self-Protection and Sexual Offences Learning Program. We plan to train 250 in this financial year. We will have a backlog of, we will have a remaining 178 that still will need to be trained, and we envisage training them in the next financial year. I must add that the 178 may increase because we are also looking at, we may increase the capacity as the caseload increases.
The Treasury apparently won't allow that, Chair. No, you won't.
Madam Chair, the increase in capacity for the FCS would come from within my environment, within the detective service environment, so I would hope that as the workload increased, that I would be able to redirect some of the resources to the FCS unit as well. Madam Chair, on the question of specific training that is planned for the environment, we spoke about specific training. We have the following training courses that are planned in this financial year. The basic court investigators course, where we will have 7 courses with 133 attendees. The firearm investigators course, where we will have 2 courses with 55 attendees. The organized crime investigation course, with 5 courses with 125 attendees. The question may be asked that organized crime is the DPCI's responsibility. But during these courses, we also train detectives from station level on these courses because they also must be exposed to these environments. We also do some of those investigations. The vehicle crime investigator schools, where we will have 4 and 100 attendees. The serious and violent crime course, where we will have 5 with 125 attendees. The family violence, child protection, and sexual offences course, as I alluded to earlier, we will have 5 calls of 250 attendees. Counterterrorism investigators course, 3 with 75 attendees. The sexual offences course for investigators, 51 with 1,064 attendees. The stop theft investigators course, we plan to train 18, one course with 18 attendees. The sexual offences, as mentioned. Then short interventions, Madam Chair, we're looking at having courses or interventions on interview skills, where we plan for 2 courses with 40 attendees. Interview and interrogation, 1 with 25 attendees. Statement taking, statement writing workshop, 20 courses with 480 attendees.
Can I intervene just there? Because I think that information is available. You can proceed then probably tabulating each course that you have.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair, as I recall, I asked just for 2 figures. How many detectives in the country? You've given us a figure of 1,727 for FCS environment. I meant detectives overall and how many are fully qualified. If I could just have those 2 figures, please.
Madam Chair, the question, how many detectives do we have currently and what is the ideal number? That was another question. I will answer it now. We have 21,100 detectives. The ideal that we would like is 21,100 detectives. We're talking about general detectives. Madam Chair, I need to allude. These are detectives at station level and excludes your FCS, your vehicle crime, your stop theft, so forth. We have trained thus far
17,314 detectors. 17,314 melanogens. That same 10,000 that you've trained, is that fully trained, or is it a ROC? Is it a learning program? What is it?
No. Madam Chair, this 17,314 excludes the 2 weeks basic crime investigation course. It excludes the 2 weeks basic crime. So it could be, like myself, who have got the 3 weeks detective course that was initially the course when we started, then we changed it to the detective learning program to 6 weeks, and then we changed it to the 14 weeks or 15 weeks ROC. So it's all the different training patterns. Madam Chair, the question on detective placeback was answered by Lieutenant General Labrie. I've answered now the question on how many detectives and the ideal as well, what we feel we would like to have. The training of branch detective commanders, Madam Chair, we trained 1,157 since 2007. The question will arise, but you trained 1,157 out of 1,126 stations. But in this 1,157, we trained commanders of other specialized units as well, like SCS, vehicle crime, stock theft, organized crime, commercial crime. We went further and we started training the second in charge in the detective environment. So therefore, we are still busy with training. We plan to train in the 2011-12 in the 2012-13 financial 305 commanders in the Detective Commanders Learning Program. Last year, we trained 346 in the Detective Commanders Learning Program Manager. Madam Chair, the question, how are you going to enhance stock theft units in FCS? We have...
I just have a follow-up in terms of the detective commanders. I understand what you're saying, that you've trained in other environments commanders as well. Why is it then that we still find... Is it a question of people getting promoted to detective commanders before they've done the command course? And that we would find then people who have actually done the detective command course in other environments instead of being in the detective command environment.
Madam Chair, it is true that the detective commanders are appointed without having to undergo a detective commander's learning program. It is not a requirement in terms of policy for a officer to be appointed as a detective commander. And at times, we do find some of these commanders, they could be very good investigators, but when they are appointed, they are totally lacking as commanders. And that's where we have to intervene. What we've decided with human resource development, we had a meeting last week where I've decided that instead of the provinces nominating commanders to attend the Detective Commanders Learning Program, that we, from my office, would nominate commanders after doing inspections from our reports that we have to decide who should attend those courses, and to try and see that we send those that first need those training in terms of their performance at their units. That's one of the interventions we put in place last week, Madam Chair. That goes for detectives as well. We also visited stations where you have a detective that is 8 years a detective and hasn't been to one of these courses. So we've decided with HRD, with Human Resource Development, that we would keep a database, some of our interventions at stations, and some of the inspection reports we get from inspectors to see who should be sent on these courses.
You see, I'm glad to hear these things. I think it's positive development. But you see, for me, it comes back to the skewed thing in SAP, where we appoint people before they qualify to do a job. And I'm not with that. I'm not saying everybody that's gone and went to a detective command course should become a detective commander. That's not that either. But surely we can get to a point where we say, this is a vacant position for a detective commander at the station. You can apply, but one of the requirements is that you should have underwent the detective command course before you can actually apply. Because, I mean, I might be a very good nurse, but I'm going to be a terrible doctor. And, you know, this is what we're doing. And I think that's why we have the status we have at certain police stations with detectives.
Well, you are a doctor, however you'll be a terrible physician. Or you are a good physician, but you're a terrible gynecologist. Or you are a good gynecologist, but you're a terrible orthopod. Or you are a good orthopod, but you are a terrible whatever. Thank you very much. So I think that's what you're saying.
No, Jefferson, I wanted to understand the lesson only when the general, when he says that they will go there themselves because they won't ask anybody to appoint people to come in. Are you saying therefore they're appointing people that are not sufficiently qualified to do the training? Is that the implication? Is that the implication? Are you implying that the people who are being appointed by other people is because they don't qualify to be appointed or whatever. This is why your office, therefore, will go there and recruit those people that are supposed to be.
Chair, if allow us to respond on this. I think previously when we appeared before the committee, there was an issue with regard to the appointment of procedures. In terms of appointment, and I've explained that in whatever we do, the chairperson said yesterday, there's going to always be unintended consequences on things. The appointment on any position that we have is different level. If at the station level, the person appointed as an investigator or as a commander within the station, there's different committees that are created. The committee that might be looking at the interviewing of the people there will be chaired by somebody else within that environment of the provincial office, whether it's at a cluster level or station level, depending who the provincial commission assigns. Now, the address will be clear in terms of the requirement. What comes out of the committee will not, coming to the provincial office, coming to the national office, where the appointment confirmed, does not contain the CV of a person, will not contain the application of the individual. So when all these are set aside, that out of these individuals, this one is top, can be appointed, this one is second best, or this one is third best, the only thing that's going to happen is appointment at head office, believing that what comes from the provincial office is correct. Provincial commissioner, he or she did not confirm the CVs and everything of that specific individual. They will believe that that committee that was dealing with it, they satisfied themselves that everything is correct. So it's a weakness in terms of confirming everything. So you might discover later that you've already appointed somebody. When you check, you find out that it was published before that some senior officer in the police did not have metric, but was appointed. So it's those issues that what the general is talking about, that before personnel services at the head office confirms that appointment, they themselves at the divisional level want to satisfy themselves that that specific person recommended does possess the required skills. So it's going to be quite an exercise, because you can imagine there could be an average in a month, they might have to deal with quite a number of recommendations for appointments. In each post, you'll find maybe three people that you have to get their CVs and everything, ferry it all the way to Pretoria, just to make sure that there's this check and balance. But we must accept there's been those omissions. There's been the general telling the truth, there's been appointments without meeting the requirements. So we cannot shy away from it. But we hope with all these checks we'll be able to rectify.
And added to that, I think the important point that I said is the fact that there's no policy requiring that the person should have undergone the course before he's appointed as well. So we need to look at policies around this as well. If we're not going to address the policy issue around it, well, not we. If you're not going to address the policy issue around it, we're still going to have that problem.
Thank you, Chair. Permission, you can proceed. General Munir, are you still on the floor?
Madam Chair, on the question on how are you going to enhance the stock test units in FCS, as I've earlier alluded to, that we have increased the capacity of FCS. We have also increased the units in the stock test unit from 74 to 82. I must add, we have plans to bolster the resources of the stock test units, SCS, and detectors in general. But what's worrying me is the earlier debate on that 300 million that we spoke about there, Madam Chair. My plan makes provision for that 300 million to improve the detector service. So I want to bring that to the attention of this Honourable Committee. It's going to affect my plans as well.
Chairperson, you know, I have sympathy with that in this regard, but I also have sympathy with Treasury in this regard. If we just look at the waste seats within SAPS, the 75 million that was irregular expenditure in the previous financial year. Now we're already talking about a third of the money that you're requiring in either FCS or in detector service, almost a third of the money. We look at the contract that you've spoken about yesterday. There's another 100 million. If we look at today's papers in terms of the department's expenditure on entertainment, it's 150 million. So I really think, and that comes back to the issue that we've raised yesterday as well, that a rand wasted is unacceptable. And to some extent it's good as Treasury has cut. It's a pity it's affecting us the way it does, but we've been warning staff year after year after year after year, do not take these increases for granted. This country has got other priorities that need to be addressed as well. Those very statement that the National Commissioner was making yesterday about other departments having roles to play as well, those are some of those priorities that need to be funded from that very same Treasury. So it's a pity we find ourselves in this situation, but let's not waste more than a billion on Tekra equipment lying somewhere in a warehouse in France with no implementation plan. Let's not waste money on a PCM that none of us have been told what the advantages are. And let's start using the money where it's supposed to be using. We've warned you for year in and year out that there's a bottom to the source of money. And my sympathy is actually very, very, very thin. It goes about prioritization and ensuring that we don't waste money. I'm not blaming the detectives, neither am I blaming FSL, neither am I blaming anybody else, but what I'm saying is, I think the time has come for this management to make sure that money are spent according to the rules and what it was intended for spending. For years and years and years, your building environment chew away at your money. Years and years and years. For years and years and years, your supply chain management has been raped the resources. Time has come to take responsibility and do something about it.
And I hear what you're saying, Craig. However, we're talking about a plan that was presented to us that talked to the finance. And we are told by the CFO that indeed that money was moved from to. That's the thing. I don't have a problem with you looking for 300 million wherever, but that money was moved from to. And we were presented with a plan. We were. And we're looking forward to that plan being implemented. And I fully agree with Honorable Annelies. If we can have 76 million for, and be able up to so far to condone 70 million, which is questionable even that condonement, and not been able to condone the 6 million up until now, we cannot complain. Surely we can't. This is one organization that has got money to play. For this organization, a million is like a run. So that's the unfortunate thing. I understand what you're saying. However, we're talking about a plan that was presented to the portfolio committee. If there's one thing I read is with regards to FSL for many reasons. And therefore, I know exactly as to what it is that they said last year. Even with this Marshall's meeting, that General Pahlane continued to tell us that he's preparing reports and this and that, and he's not told us that he's reported these matters to the Hawks for investigation and for arrest of people. Who lied to the portfolio committee that it was dismantled and could not tell us as to who dismantled that at what cost? To do what with that machine? And we've been asking to this senior management, and there's no other management above this management. So it's these things that we have, and like I'm saying, we know what has been said. So I understand your frustration. However, we're talking about a plan, and that is why I wouldn't have a problem with the department taking money from TMS, because in the first event we asked TMS last year, you're budgeting 3.6 billion rand for TMS. Next thing we are told, there is no infrastructure, and that is why they can't spend that budget. I mean, now do you explain? So I'm just saying that. I'm raising. I understand what you're saying. However, unfortunately, talking about a plan, and we're talking about, we also have our, we have prisons, and we're committing people to say we went to Canada and this is what this department presented to us. An implementation plan was presented to this portfolio committee by this department to say this is how we are going to implement this act. They promised that even if you don't have technology to do it, you can even do it manually. It's not happening. Now, when we think that we have the department that must come and account to us and say this is what we're going to do, then we're told, no, we've moved, budget, and it's not possible to happen. We can't accept that. Good as I understand that you might actually be disadvantaged, but I think this department must find money to fund your program, because there is more than enough. If you have a department that is able to procure equipment for 39 million on quotation, 39 million have got to do that, got fit and do it and plan and do it and actually implement it. I mean, the department cannot come to the portfolio committee and say we don't have money. It cannot. No matter what, it cannot.
Chairperson, we'll proceed. I think we should allow General Pasane to respond to some of the questions that have been asked. Madam Chair.
Thanks, General. Thanks, Chair. Members of the Portfolio Committee. I think the first one that I would want to respond to, Chair, is the Marshall System. We were asked for a report following the investigation that I said we are doing. I have produced that report on the 6th of May, 2011. That report was signed off by General Skele on the 15th of June for submission to the Portfolio Committee. When we appeared on the 18th of October, by then the Chair had not received that report. Chair asked that the report be resubmitted, which I did resubmit on the 20th of October 2011. So my apologies if that report is not in your hands, but we have concluded that investigation. That report entailed, Chair will recall, you had asked for a cost analysis, a comparative analysis between the GFPS and the manual system. It is a similar report, and I have got a copy there of, unfortunately, it is now electronically here. I may forward it so that it can be printed today still. My apologies if it never reached you. But in short, Chair, in as far as the Marshall System is concerned, one of the issues that we were looking at was to try and trace the components of the Marshall System, which at a point I could not confidently say that I know where it went. That's the investigation, and we were able to account and in terms of where those that they said such equipment is still in the environment, where were they? We were able to. It is in that same report where we reported that the person responsible for the dismantling of the Marshall System services has been terminated. In this case, it is Brigadier Hubert. But I'll forward a copy in this regard. There is an issue that...
Why did you not open a case against this person? Why did you not open a criminal case against this person? Is it because there was no criminal... there were no criminal implications? I mean, why would you allow that the person resigns and that is all? They dismantle the machine and do whatever, and then they go and that's it. They've escaped. Who must be charged criminally if he is doing wrong?
If I may, Chair, I did say when I appeared before the committee that his removal was to avoid further embarrassment on my part. I could not continue with people who continue to plunge us into a crisis. It was not the only thing. We were spoken also about the equipment that was procured before, which remained in boxes and never been utilized. Yes, I'll maybe admit to say part of what had to be done was a criminal investigation, but in as far as compliance with the related prescripts, in as far as decommissioning and so on is concerned, that part was taken care of. So it is maybe the criminal part that we can admit there is maybe an oversight on our part by not having went that route.
General Pashane, in South Africa, corruption is being defined according to racial lines. There are those who are not corrupt and those that are corrupt. You must have a particular color of your skin to be corrupt, and another color of your skin, you're not corrupt. You must be charged criminally. If you are another color of the skin, if your skin is this color, you're not charged criminally. And I have a serious challenge with that. I have a serious challenge with that because
corruption must be corruption irrespective. And I have a challenge with that. If people run away because they've done things, and we then say, and it's police that have all the rights to arrest, I don't understand. I completely disagree with that view. We've been asking this question continuously because we hate this information that some people have done these things. Probably it's just the tip of an iceberg. What you're telling us, General Kashan, more has not been uncovered. Maybe because it's not seen the Chikung.
Can I ask a question, Chair? To General Kashan, can we still do it? If the answer is yes, when?
I want to fully agree with the chairperson. Not only along the issue of the racial lines, we saw that on Tuesday when we started as well, that there are certain set of rules for certain people and another set of rules for other people. But the fact of the matter is, how is it possible that in SAS, first of all, how was it possible that the committee again was the ones that started highlighting the issue because of information? It happened in SAPS, in your own facilities, taking place there. In front of your eyes, visiting that. I mean, we were there, we saw years ago, even before this parliamentary session, previous parliament, we saw those boxes of things standing there, in the hallways. You've got the issue of the quotations happening in front of your eyes. It's there. We still need to see anybody that's been prosecuted for corruption in SAPS. The Minister of Finance, Minister Gordon, is on the record saying that the time has arrived that people within state institutions who are guilty of corruption are prosecuted to the point where they are sentenced to jail sentences. Because what do we do in the state? And Seth, you are a prime example of this. We go as far as giving them, what is this, the ridiculous section, whatever, retirement? Section 35 retirement. We not only get rid of them, we pay them extra money just to get rid of them. Instead of prosecuting them. Or we transfer them. But we don't prosecute them. We don't do criminal investigations. I was saying to General Dramat, you heard, just that 5 million you can achieve by just investigating one of these issues in your own department. And Jefferson, I'm sorry, this management can blame nobody but themselves for this. Because the power of doing so lies in their hands. You don't have to go to anybody and ask permission to open a criminal case of investigation. You are the authority to do so. Why is it, and that's what worries me, why is it that we see what I am experiencing, and I'm speaking for myself, but what I'm experiencing as a lack of will to do this. Why is it that we're scared to do this? Is it because if we do test this one, that person has got information on another one, and on another one, and on another one, and therefore, let's rather not stir here. Jefferson, I think the time has arrived for this committee when the committee gets told about things. If SAPS themselves don't have the will to lay the charges, then we should do so. I think the time has arrived. I really believe that we can't carry on this way. Given early retirement, you know who I'm speaking about. I mean, the person is not much older than I am, a year or two, I think. Go on early retirement, huge extra payout. Huge extra payout. No delivery, year after year after year, you underspent in that environment. Talking about your IT environment. Year after year, you underspent in that environment. We know what has happened there. But there's no move to do an investigation to arrest the person and to bring the person to book. No, let's rather pay off millions of rands for this person to go on early retirement than they become consultants and we still pay them. I don't understand.
Chairperson, maybe I ask you a wrong person. I should ask the acting commissioner, acting national commissioner about these things, because it seems as if we are happening in one and the same thing, and we are saying one and the same thing. Is there any problem in charging these people that we are talking about? If there is a problem, where is the problem? If the problem is that what Ms. Van Wyk is saying, that if you, I'm just using an example here, if you are charging General Standard will appoint General Amola and General Amola will appoint somebody else and somebody else, it will be opening a can of worms. Are you afraid of that, or are you? Is there anything that prevents you to charge these people and make these people appear in court? Because sometimes, you see, if police are doing this, and they are supposed to be arresting the criminals, and they are part and parcel of the criminals, then how do you clean yourself? How do you reposition yourself? How do you bring back your dignity? How do you say that we are trying to make sure that we are making you as a safeguard of this country and this as a citizen of this country, and so on? If you can't even prosecute one of your own, what's wrong with that? Do you have a problem with that? I don't want to buy the chairperson's idea that it's because I'm this color, it's because of that color. Because if by doing that, that means we are going backwards instead of forward. This is a constitutional state. We have to do it properly. Why don't we do it? They are all people in the we are all the same under the law. We should be charged. If we are not charged, why? Is there any problem in doing so? If there is a problem, why are we not told that there is this problem? So that we know exactly if there is a problem. So that both of us may come up with a solution of overcoming it. Than to be on your own and then we are crying somewhere else. This has not bridge a bridge between us, you and us. Let us be together in fighting this thing. Corruption is corruption. It doesn't matter where it does it, what color it is. It is corruption. Let's deal with it. Unless you don't want to say that we are all corrupt. Let us just forget it. I don't want to buy that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chair, as this topic has been raised, I'm just interested in the business of the Section 35 that were given out. Now, it was revealed to us last year that there were just under 20, I think, of these Section 35 dished out, and the claim was that, number one, they could only be signed off by the National Police Commissioner, the now suspended National Police Commissioner. And number two, that a number of the people who'd been given them were actually under criminal investigation. Now, if I as an individual decide to hand a fat pension package to someone, despite the fact that they're under criminal investigation, I would have thought that in itself is the committing of a crime. How do you possibly justify that? And I wondered now if the Hawks, perhaps, are investigating this, or are we in the same situation that I always said we would be at, where SAFs don't investigate themselves. I know you are doing a number of investigations, but that seems to me to be a prime one. How can you dish out enormous payoffs to people who are under investigation, such as your last head of legal services, under a major investigation, given a fat pension package? Off you go, take the money, and if you're found guilty, we can't get the money back. That was what was confirmed. We can't get the money back from these fat pensions, even if they're found guilty of having committed criminal acts whilst they were members in the SAP. But you go on dishing them out, as with the one that we've been referring to here, as with others. They've taken the fat packages, and the taxpayer will never get that money back. No matter whether or not you ever find them guilty of criminal action, they're under investigation, and yet you dished it out. You dished it out. And I want to know if there's anybody here in front of us who's investigating this matter, or is this also just going to be swept under the carpet? Because that's what's tending to happen.
Chairperson, honourable members, I agree with you, crime is crime. It needs to be investigated. The commitment given is that any case, corruption related, that involves the amount of more than 3 million rand, if I'm correct, will be dealt with by the Hawks through the ACTT. Gerald Ramad, I'll allow him an opportunity to respond on these questions, but I must say that I've learned of a possible corruption within the IT environment on this specific budget, which amounts to millions of rand, hundreds of millions of rand. When I learn about it, somebody says to me, the newly appointed general within the TML tells me that there seems to be a contract that was signed of a certain amount of money, but the expenditure on that has gone beyond that. Not with 1% or 2%, it's gone with many percentages above than what was agreed upon. So I since then I instructed, and I hope I can still do this before maybe the Act is reviewed, Gerald Drama to open the investigation case docket in this regard and investigate the matter. Yesterday, Chairperson read the procurement of the equipment for the World Cup. I have since instructed our internal audit to conduct an inquiry on this, and not only maybe items that were on the letter, Chairperson and the members, any other items that might have been procured during the World Cup or in preparation for the World Cup. There's quite a lot of expenditure that took place. I requested them to work together with training, because largely most of those things were bought by them, our supply chain environment, as well as our finance, to be able to understand exactly what went wrong, especially the fact that the auditor general will not find anything wrong with those procurements of which we had yesterday were on not on tender, but in terms of quotations of that amount. So there will be investigations taking place as soon as the inquiry is finished to determine exactly. And that inquiry shouldn't take longer than a month to be able to give us an indication whether there is any criminality in this thing or not. But I'll allow General Drama to be able to respond on these issues, because I'm sure most of these things have been within the police for some time.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Just to confirm that with the issue of corruption, one of the factors that we do not look at is the question of the person's colour or the person's position, or whether the person is in the South Africa Police Service or in any other department or private sector. Maybe just to give that assurance that that is the process. All allegations of corruption are processed. They are either through the form of an inquiry initially, like the general has alluded, now there would be an inquiry, and then one would be able to see if there are any elements of to prove the crime, and a formal case docket is registered and gets investigated and presented to the prosecuting authority. It's not the case that all matters of corruption reported or allegations gets investigated by the ACDT or the DPCI necessary, but there is a process of looking at all the allegations, including allegations at times, Madam Chair, that perhaps gets raised in the media. All those allegations are indeed looked at and followed up. Matters that's raised like now by within this portfolio committee, there is a process where they are all looked at, and they don't disappear off the radar screen. There is a process in terms of prioritization to see if any of those matters does meet the criteria of the 5 million rand worth of assets that could be restrained. And if not, it doesn't mean that it does not get investigated, but it is referred to one of the other units for further investigation. Of these investigations, Madam Chair, at times are rather time-consuming, so it might give the impression while the matter is reported a year ago that the matter hasn't been brought before court, that there's no investigation. There is, in fact, investigation. It's just that it is time-consuming. If one just looks by the amounts of money that these contracts hold, one can imagine that it would take us quite a bit of time in terms of investigating these cases. But just to reiterate that none of these allegations, or all allegations, are in fact processed. And the other thing that one would just want to highlight is around the 5 million. Whilst the contract at times might be big in terms of number, it does not necessarily mean that the whole amount is criminally involved. And at times, in looking at these cases, you might find that there's a number of individuals that could have benefited criminally, and they might not have 5 million each. One might have had 2 million or 1 million. Does not still mean that we do not take those or restrain those assets. It's just that it's not automatic that if there's a big contract and a big amount, that automatically it would meet that specific target of the 100 individuals. Yeah, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. If you allow to proceed with the response, allowing General Patlana to proceed.
No, Chairperson, I just want to get an assurance here before we pass this meeting. I'm sorry, Chairperson, to jump on you. But I just want to get an assurance here. We are talking about a person that has already been resigned, and the name was mentioned here. And we are saying that person, how can a person resign when he has done something wrong? Can we get an assurance of what will happen tomorrow? That's the only thing that I'm asking. I'm not asking that you must go and arrest him now because you don't have a case. But somebody has, the name has been said here, acting National Commissioner, and somebody is known where he is or what he's doing, or wherever where he is. But can we get an assurance of what will happen tomorrow? Let us start to make an example. Let us have a dot of some sort, a dent of some sort. I mean, I'm just asking for it. Can we get an assurance of that, please?
Sorry, Chair, I don't believe I heard an answer to my question, whether any of those who were granted the Section 35 and were under criminal investigation, whether those cases are going anywhere or whether they've just been buried. We've been told we can't get the money back, but do we at least know that these cases are going ahead or being investigated, and we may actually see some arrests?
Thank you very much. Chair. Sorry, I'm not responding. The people, irrespective of whether they've resigned, whether they've been issued given a Section 35 or not, the offence is investigated, and if we're able to find sufficient evidence that this person will be arrested. So the issue, the person was issued the Section 35 does not necessarily influence the criminal. If there's evidence of the criminality, the person will be arrested. So in short, the issue of the Section 35 does not affect negatively the investigation.
Chairperson, if just a follow-up on this one, I will try and get the exact stats in terms of all these ones that might have gone on Section 35 under investigation, because it might not be all of them that have been dealt with by the court. So we'll get that maybe in response on writing this.
I just want to get clarity. If I remember correctly, maybe the Acting National Commissioner can just help us. Following the committee's meeting and the fact that we were upset about this, I think there was an instruction by the minister that Section 35 must also come through him from now on. Is that correct?
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, it is correct. Everything goes through him. General, you did want to respond on this. Chairperson, General Ramat did want to say more on this case.
Sorry, Chair. Just another thing that has slipped my mind is the whole capacity to investigate corruption within the department, and the National Commission referred to the ACTT. It's not a SAT-only task team. It consists of other role players, the National Prosecuting Authority, the SIU, the FIC, South African Revenue Service as well. Now, in this regard, because it relates to the issue of whether we are prepared to investigate our own, that indeed there has been inquiries and investigations by our partners in the ACTT, the SIU, into the environment that has been mentioned, and we're working very closely with the SIU, and given those reports that they produce and the criminality, would be able to process these cases. So, thank you.
Thank you, Chair. General Pasham.
Chair, thanks. I'm glad that General Dramat mentioned the SIU, because this environment is the subject of an investigation by the SIU, and if we were to deal with that particular matter alone, you will be leaving a whole range of other issues that are related to procurement in the environment. And we hope that that process should be able to guide us as to how far we go with this particular matter. And just also to place it on record that we obviously reported before the portfolio committee that we are dealing with some of these issues, including internally, and where dismissals have, for example, realized, but those dismissals are not a conclusion of the matter. It just concludes the departmental process, like the corruption that was detected within the criminal record and criminal record center environment, where we have dismissed about 5-6 members there. The unfortunate part of it, as General Dramat indicated, some of those investigations just take far too long. I mean, we opened that case, I think, in August 2010, when I got to the division. We have finalized the disciplinary, they are dismissed, but the criminal matter is still pending. I continue to receive an update from General Dramat as to where we are on those matters. Chair, thanks.
I have to thank General Pashane, I take it. However, I disagree with you that you will only act after the conclusion of the investigation by SIU, talking to a SAC member who can actually know when crime has been committed, supposed to know.
when crime has been committed. That's my issue. Probably if it was myself, you'd understand. I'm not a police member, and therefore I may necessarily not know as to when to charge a person for what, because I'm not a sub-member. But I'm talking to sub-members who surely should know that from what I have right now before me, it amounts to crime, to a crime being committed, and I can charge this person, and the charge will be 1, 2, 3. I'm just saying that. I'm just saying it. And I'm not talking to a teacher. I'm talking to a police member whose responsibility is to actually do exactly what we're talking about.
Point taken, Chair. If I may proceed with responses to other questions, I think General Munu responded to one related to the Department of Health, but safe to say that there is also an engagement from our side with the Department of Health with the intention to assist in reducing the backlogs that are on their side. Unfortunately, the situation that we discussed earlier in terms of capacity in the environment may hamper the progress that we were to make in that regard. But we continue to be sharing best practices on how we were able to progress with reducing the backlogs within the forensic science laboratories in the South African Police Service. The one issue, Chair, on the backlog, let me contextualize my response by first saying that in 2010-2011 financial year, we had a total of 260,826 entries or exhibits received within the laboratory. In the previous financial year, we have realized a 27% increase of what we are or we have received, which is 331,876. Now, at the end of the financial year, in our previous reporting, we reported that our backlog as of the 1st of April 2011 were 16,200. At the beginning of this financial year, in other words, on the 1st of April, despite the increased intake of exhibits within the environment, we had realized a 30% decrease in as far as those backlogs are concerned, which brings us to a figure of 11,310. Chair, I will maybe afterwards forward this electronically because the information is readily available. In terms of, if you take the various disciplines of where the backlogs are, we still do not have much of an issue in the ballistic environment. At the end of this financial year, we have got 10 cases, which we consider them to be backlogged. In the chemistry environment, we experience problems, chemistry as well as in the biology environment, DNA. Now, there, in the biology environment, when we started at the end of the first quarter of, in other words, first quarter of the financial year, our backlog had gone drastically down to 769. We now have the unfortunate situation where we are, at the end of the second quarter, it went down further to 656. At the end of the third quarter, it went to 7,817. Now, the question is why? It went up there because the committee may remember that we have said in the new financial year, which is the previous financial year, we are implementing new targets. Initially, they were looking at the exhibit from when it is assigned to an analyst, and they were looking at a 35-day period. My problem with that was that you were then not accounting for from when that particular exhibit arrived in the laboratory. So we changed the target to say, to time the entire process, from when it is received in the laboratory and when is it going out. So our target there is 28 days, in other words, finalize it within 28 days from when it is received. Process, beginning to end. Now, when, because we do periodic reviews on a quarterly basis, we realized that there was, for example, the Western Cape Laboratory was not implementing yet that new target. They were still reporting on the 35 days period from when it got to analyst. So we had to go back and make sure that that is purified to be in line with the new target that we have done. So that is the very first reason why it went up. Secondly, Chair, you have asked earlier about the CLA, which I will respond to. We had to take, because of the implementation of that, following the validation, we had to start with capacitating the members to be able to utilize, to work on the CLA. So the limited resources that we had to take people out so that they could follow the CLA training. So it then had a negative impact on the workload in terms of distribution, because for that period you don't have the number of analysts that you would love to have in that environment. And the third reason, obviously, is what I've mentioned earlier, to say with the increase, which is correct, of exhibits coming to the laboratories, the capacity cannot cope. So we are now stretching them. Thus, the additional numbers will come handy to plug that gap, to make sure that we are able to sustain what we have brought into the environment. So at the end of the, having had that increase to 7,817, at the end of the fourth quarter, which means the 1st of April this year, we are going down again on, we were on 4,475. That is in the biology or DNA environment. Chemistry, Chair, we have recorded also there an increase, and we have explained previously that our problem there is the single tablet exhibit, where operations are not necessarily focused on the dealer or on the supplier. You know, they, you get what is it, more the runners arrested, and all that is coming into the laboratory in high volumes. We have got that problem here in the Western Cape. We have got that problem in Gauteng, where we see the single tablet cases coming in, and unfortunately every single tablet that is coming in is to be analyzed, even if you have to have a huge consignment. And unfortunately, the cost is the same. It is much more expensive. So there, in chemistry, we started at the end of the first quarter, we were on 3404, and we ended the last quarter on 64004. There is a good progress that has been made in question documents. We started with 894 as a backlog. We are now on 182. Scientific environment, we were on 234. Second quarter, it went to 331 and then 277, and it's coming down. We are now on 239. So that, Chair, accounts for the 11,310 that we are saying it's a backlog. But also to say that
a little question there about the DNA. Over the past 4 years, your labs apparently linked DNA to 1,000 series of rapes involving about 5,000 rapes. Now, do you have, does SAPS have a policy document, a national instruction, some way forward in tracking down serial rapists? Because if there have been links made, 5,000 rapes linked to 1,000 sets of DNA. How do you drive it? I mean, is there an actual method that you use to drive this in the same sort of enthusiasm as SAPS would drive the looking for people who run cash in transit heists or anything else? I would feel that the rape victims are the very last people to be focused upon.
Chair, if I may respond, thanks for the question. I think that that situation informed the establishment of the Capacity Investigative Psychology Unit. I have got the Professor Lavis Lochmi here. Part of his responsibility is to work together with the DNA team. So all those things that have been realized will then be communicated through to him, and we will then dispatch it to the respective provinces for those cases to be investigated. Our approach is always to request the provincial commissioners that such be investigated in a task team format, because you'll find that this person is operating, say, in the area of Pretoria. Then you'll find the victim was in the Pretoria Central area, some are in Sunnyside area, and some are maybe in Silverton. So if you don't have that information coming through, you end up investigating those cases individually. So to avoid that kind of a situation, we communicate the links through to the divisional detective services, as well as to the respective divisional provincial commissioners, and there is follow-up in that regard. What we intend doing going forward is to cascade the investigative psychology capacity to the provinces, so that we have got presence. At this stage, we have got coordinators, people have been trained, but we will sort of want to have a sustainable approach with a structure. But that is if, at the end of the day, we derive joy out of the issues that we are raising in terms of capacity.
Just on that note of capacity, General Pashane, we have to attend. We have a workshop from 2 which we have to attend as members, and then we think that it's going to start at 2 until 5. But it is possible that we can actually attend earlier than that. And I was reliably told by the Acting National Commissioner that you will be around. So in an event, we attend early. We will phone to save 15 minutes so that we can start early, that we do not go to Iskata's Leiting Akul. And there is some Molanyana finger lunch there, and you are invited. We will therefore be meeting here officially at 5. It can actually be earlier than that. Thank you very much. And General Pashane, you will continue with your answers when you come back through you. Thank you.